This is the introduction for Decatur, Part 1.
Hello, this is Atah Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, February 18th, 2020. We begin on the front page, Black History Month. Discovering History, Scavenger Hunt Helps Youth Learn About African American Culture. This article is by Garrett Karsten from Decatur. The bronze and granite sculpture in downtown's Water Street Plaza Park has an amazing story to tell. It depicts African American soldiers rising from the bondage of slavery, joining the Union Army, and taking part in several important Civil War battles. From the cotton field to the battlefield, Iking Campbell, 9, said Monday, reading the plaque on the side of the sculpture, in honor of the thousands of African American soldiers who fought in the Civil War in defense of equal rights for all. Unveiled in 2009 by its creator, Decatur native Preston Jackson, the sculpture served as the first stop of the iconic Black History Scavenger Hunt and Soul Food Celebration on Monday. Jarmise Sherrod, the event's organizer, said she started the event as a way to celebrate Black History Month by teaching area youth about the contributions of key figures in African American history. Kids and volunteers pushed on despite gloomy weather conditions, many wearing ponchos donated by Boys and Girls Club of Decatur. Sherrod created the event through the SIMP Inc., a company she established in 2002 that regularly hosts programs meant to inspire young students. Sherrod is also a Richland Community College professor. Around a dozen students, ranging from grades 5 to 12, were divided into teams and tasked with solving clues scattered around downtown Decatur. Each clue led to a local business, and points were scored after teams uploaded a photo of the location through a smartphone app. Information detailing the life of Nancy Green, a former slave, who later signed a lifetime contract to model the Aunt Jemima pancake mix in the 1890s, awaited the teams at Dell's Popcorn Shop, for example. After the scavenger hunt, the group ate dinner at Jewelry Grill, a local eatery at 820 North Main Street that specializes in soul food. "It's a good time for us to learn about our culture and what happened back in the day," said Janice Sherrod, 16, who helped her mother, Jarmise, organize the scavenger hunt. The high school student was one of four leaders who helped guide teams of younger children around downtown. She also set up the smartphone app that kept score of each team, since her mom is not very good with technology. In addition to the history lesson, Jarmise Sherrod said the event also was intended to get the students better acquainted with downtown businesses. "There are so many great Decatur staples here in town. Why not introduce them to some of the businesses early?" Sherrod said. "They might be the next leaders that take over some of those businesses in the future." And one of the photos here, Jeremy Sherrod, Wright, works with Garrett Henderson during the scavenger hunt Monday. The event was organized by Sherrod's Independent Mentoring Program, or SIMP. And beautiful bright pink coat, bright pink umbrella, and looks like traditional head covering and camera and rain poncho on Garrett here. Let's go to the main photo. 9-year-old Iking Campbell, Wright, reads the description on the side of the sculpture in downtown Decatur on Monday during the iconic Black History Scavenger Hunt and Soul Food Celebration. Decatur native Preston Jackson created the sculpture to honor African-American soldiers who served during the Civil War. And it is a very large, beautiful plaque, raised relief with Civil War depictions all on the front here. All right, we move on to the education section. Students track fitness goals. Argenta Oriana PE class utilizes heart monitors. Valerie Wells, Argenta. Doctors suggest 60 minutes a day of moderate to vigorous exercise is optimal for good health for kids. at Argenta Orienta Middle School physical education class is 40 minutes a day, and some of the time is spent changing, warming up, and cooling down, so teacher Abby Schulman estimates the students get only about 20 minutes of actual exercise at school, which means the rest is up to them to do on their own. To help train the kids to monitor their own fitness level and exertion, she applied to the Illinois Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance, IAHPERD, for a grant to buy heart monitors for the students to use during PE class. I had been teaching elementary PE, so I was kind of excited to come to the middle school and try out some of the theories I'd learned, Schulman said. She and co-teacher Caleb Renfro wanted to get 40 heart monitors and an iPad so the students could track their heart rates in real time. The grant covered about two-thirds of the cost, and the district covered the rest, she said. We wanted enough for our biggest class so every kid in class can have one, she said. The zones are color-coded for easy identification, and kids can see if they're working hard enough to get the most benefit from the workout. And the most useful thing about it, she said, is that kids are striving for their own best level instead of being compared to each other. For example, the athletes who compete on the school's teams have a different level of fitness than the more sedentary kids, and it takes much more work for them to reach a higher heart rate. One student, Schulman said, can reach his optimum heart rate and get the most cardiovascular benefit doing fewer laps than, for example, a basketball player, yet that student always felt he wasn't keeping up with the other kids. With the heart monitors, he can see that he's working just as hard. Anytime they're in zone 3, 4, or 5, they're accumulating minutes toward their goal and making themselves heart healthier, Schulman said. The goal isn't to reach the maximum heart rate, which is what the kids thought at first, Renfro said. Staying in that top zone too long can actually be harmful. What they want is healthy exertion to strengthen their hearts and increase their endurance. School children used to take the annual presidential fitness test, which experts now liken to military training exercises rather than overall fitness in children. Kids in middle and high school were expected to do 40 push-ups, 10 pull-ups, a mile run in 6 minutes 30 seconds, and other benchmarks that were intimidating even for active kids. That test was discontinued in the 2012-2013 academic year, and the goal is for kids to improve their own individual fitness. The presidential youth fitness program is more about assessing children's health and is confidential among students, parents, and teachers. It measures the aerobic capacity, body composition, flexibility, muscle strength, and endurance, and gives the teacher and student the tools to improve fitness. At Argenta Orienta, for example, the students look at their results and create goals to improve their fitness and work on those goals with their teacher's help. When I'm in a different zone, it tells me whether to slow down or keep pushing myself, said Carter Logue, 12, a sixth grade basketball player. Now that the basketball season is over, he said he'll be starting track season, and knowing how his body feels at maximum performance will be a help. You get a lot of information about your heart and how you can increase your endurance and your balance and get stronger, and gives you information about how healthy or not healthy you are, said 11-year-old Sarai Roman. When you're doing exercise and you're sweating, it's like a sign that you're let your heart monitor know how your heart is getting more energy. And a great photo here of sixth grader Braden McCoskey running, and it looks like maybe running to the side, a huge smile on his face with his gray Argenta Orienta physical education t-shirt and his name in the box here, box of the shirt on the front, and arms swinging to the side, and looks like some of his classmates in the background as well, having a good time exercising. That is great. All right, we move on to the public safety section. Officials monitoring issue with rowdy teens. Sheriff, groups causing problems near Forsyth Mall. This article is by Tony Reed from Forsyth. One restaurant owner is considering extra security, and the sheriff's office is looking to step up the presence of law enforcement in an effort to stop groups of rowdy teenagers causing problems near Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth. The issue has arisen before, but trouble has flared in recent months. Macon County Sheriff Tony Brown described most of the trouble caused by the juveniles as involving yelling, foul language, and disruptive behavior. Brown said the worst incident recently had been the battery of a restaurant worker. Business owners and Forsyth Village officials recently met with the sheriff's office to discuss the issue and to look at ways of controlling it. "We need to work in a collaborative effort to get this done," said Brown in a phone interview Monday. He said police will work to have more deputies available in the area at the most crucial times, which so far have proven to be Friday and Saturday nights. Gary Birschbach, who owns the McDonald's restaurant in Forsyth, said he's only noticed problems with large groups of youths, typically aged 14 or 15, since the fall. He did not want to go into details, but said on a recent occasion, a member of his staff had been physically assaulted and there had been property damage. "We're monitoring it," he said, "of the situation, and we may have to go to security guards. I hope we don't have to, but we will if it comes down to that." Brown said parents also have to take more responsibility for their children and monitor what they are up to. "Many times you have parents drop their kids off at the mall like it's babysitting," said Brown. "I hate to say it like that, but that's what it is. It's babysitting. Parents come back later to pick up their kids, but they may not know what they've been doing." The sheriff suggested the problem may spike when large groups of kids, unaccompanied by adults or parents, are thrown out of the mall, which has its own security staff, and then roam around looking for other places to congregate. Brown said his senior staff had spoken with the mall, and he said the best way to tackle the problem was for businesses and police to cooperate closely. Brown said simple measures can achieve a lot. "When we have deputies in the area and they are not working a call, we encourage them to get out on foot and actually walk the mall," he said. Village of Forsyth Mayor Marilyn Johnson described the issue as a concern that had to be addressed. She said the village would be willing to look at tightening local laws to make it easier for the police to control rowdy crowds, and said she would also like to see businesses cooperating with each other. Johnson said the mall, for example, could let the movie theater know if a large group of kids were exiting the mall building. She said representatives from the mall had been invited to the recent meeting with the police but did not attend. "I was very disappointed about that," she said. "It could have been helpful because the group of kids usually starts at the mall and goes from there." A spokesman for Chattanooga, Tennessee-based CBL Properties, Inc., which manages the mall, did not return a call seeking comment Monday, a public holiday. A spokesman for AMC Theaters also did not return a call seeking comment. "Problems with large, unruly groups of teenagers in and around the mall are nothing new." A Herald and Review story in March outlined the problem and quoted Macon County Sheriff's Lieutenant Jamie Belcher, who said police were stepping up patrols. Belcher said teens who cause particular problems can be cited for disorderly conduct, a Class A misdemeanor. They can also be banned from private property, like the mall or a restaurant, and cited for criminal trespass if they return. And we move on to page A3, local and state. Scoville Zoo, and let's start with this great picture. Zoe Wrigley, 5, gets up close to Jack, one of the two camels at Scoville Zoo's Breakfast with a Keeper event on Monday. And so the first thing you notice is this beautiful thick coat, winter coat probably, on this camel, on Jack. And then that's on the right, filling probably half of the photo. And on the left, Zoe Wrigley, who is 5, in her pink hooded coat, her handout, along with an adult, maybe the trainer, and another adult, and a few people around as well, everyone with smiles on their faces. So the article, Scoville Zoo Visitors Get Up Close with Camels. Valerie Wells, Decatur. Jack the Camel was fascinated with young Dylan Moore at Scoville Zoo's Breakfast with a Keeper event on Monday. Surrounded by people anxious to meet and offer treats to him, including two other children, Jack's focus was clearly on young Dylan. Both he and Dylan have birthdays coming up, too. Dylan will be 1 and Jack will be 6. Dylan's sister, Ellie Mae, 4, wore a t-shirt featuring a picture of a camel and the caption, "Spit happens." She's a big fan of the zoo and sponsors a goat named Tourmaline in the petting zoo. The rest of the family sponsors animals, too. "I know how much they like to put spit on your hat," Ellie Mae said. Her dad, Brandon Moore, had just had a close encounter with Jack, who drooled all over the hood of his coat. "We like to support the zoo," Brandon Moore said. "We live pretty close and we were having withdrawals because we come about once a week during the summer months. This was a good opportunity to come and bring her here and see some of the animals and get Ellie Mae out of the house." Jack and Sasha, the other Bactrian camel at the zoo, were not bothered by the cold rain on Monday morning, and the humans were anxious enough to meet them that everyone waded out to the camel's barnyard with hoods up and umbrellas at the ready. Sasha, at age 17, is elderly for a camel and suffers from arthritis, for which she takes medication, so she declined to get up to interact. Jack, on the other hand, is friendly and curious and was quite willing to accept treats and be petted on his soft nose. Ellie Mae and Zoe Wrigley, 5, another child who was there, were a little shy about offering treats to an animal who towered over them, even with keeper Mindy Weaver standing by to assist. Assistant director Dave Webster gave the group the rundown on camels before the visit to the animals outdoors, with plenty of photos showing camels' unique characteristics, like the split upper lip that allows them to grasp leaves while foraging, their long, long eyelashes and lengthy, narrow nostrils that help protect them in sandstorms, and their dinner plate-sized flat feet that allow them to walk on sand without getting bogged down. The keepers spend a lot of time training the camels, mainly with the goal of making it easier to care for them, Weaver said. Target training, for example, which Jack helpfully demonstrated during the in-person visit to the barnyard, makes it easier to move the camels from one point to another. They learn to focus on and follow a ball on a stick. Jack also cooperates with a request to hold, which means he holds his head still and allows a keeper to put a halter on his head so they can lead him if necessary. And while he's not fond of having people lift up a foot to examine it, he does allow that too. It helps that Jack is friendly and highly motivated by treats and petting for rewards. "Training is about helping us take care of them," Weaver said. Zoo director Ken Fry said the Breakfast with a Keeper event was scheduled for Monday because of the school holiday. "We thought it would be a good time and that parents would like somewhere to take their kids," he said. "The next breakfast will be in August, and the featured animals will be the penguins." So another photo here of Jack. Jack took a special interest in Dylan Moore, held by his father Brandon during their visit to Scoville Zoo. The Moore family makes regular visits to the zoo during the summer and enjoyed the off-season opportunity to visit with the camels. So Jack is sticking his neck and head out of the pen. Almost looks like he has a slight smile on his face. And Brandon, who has a pacifier and a hat and a bright, is dressed in all bright blue, tight shoes, hat, coat, being held by his father, kind of being cradled, seems to be just fine with Jack being right up there, his nose on his leg. And what a great picture. Camel facts. Camel is Arabic for beauty. Camel is Arabic for beauty. Yes, they can spit, but they usually only do so when they're annoyed. Their nearest relatives are llamas, alpacas, vicuna, and guanaco. Llamas and alpacas are domesticated, while vicuna and guanaco are wild. A dromedary has one hump. The Bactrian camel has two. Humps are mostly made up of fat, so the bigger a camel's humps, the fatter he is. Starving camel's humps shrink. The hump does not contain water. Camels are uniquely designed to go for long periods without water, but can drink as much as 15 gallons in one sitting when they do have a chance. Dromedaries are Arabian variety, while Bactrian camels like Jack and Sasha at Scoville Zoo are native to China and Mongolia. The source is the Scoville Zoo. Food in Central Illinois. BC Wings to add location. Herald and Review, Bloomington. Two Decatur restaurant owners are planning to bring their signature chicken wings to Bloomington. Brent Sloan and Craig Wilson are partnering with the owners of Mickey's Kitchen to open BC Wings at the former Mickey's Kitchen location, 1709 South Veterans Parkway, Suite A, Bloomington. BC Wings, the B is for Brent and the C is for Craig, doesn't have a specific opening date, but Sloan hopes to open soon. It will be the second location for the duo, which opened a BC Wings at 3790 East William Street Road in Decatur in October. It marked a return to the Decatur market for BC Wings, which operated the Quick Shop 66 Strip Mall, which operated in the Quick Shop 66 Strip Mall at 1320 North Water Street for 8 months. Sloan said the business closed with plans to relocate after experiencing unexpected issues in the previous location. Sloan said they are getting settled into the new Decatur location at Brush College Road and William Street Road, which was selected because of its proximity to the city's largest employers and the center of the city. The Decatur restaurant is open daily from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. and offers online ordering and delivery through DoorDash. Sloan also expects the business to begin offering a small selection of beers for dine-in customers very soon. Wilson and Sloan are veteran Decatur restaurant owners with more than 20 years of experience between them. They're each established through their other businesses, Sloan's Calzones for Sloan and Sliders Bar and Grill, Woody's and Pass the Buck for Wilson. Asked why Sloan and Wilson wanted to expand BC Wings to Bloomington, Sloan said, "We really like that area. The business we're bringing in at that location has great potential. The way we do our chicken wings is different from how anyone else does it," Sloan said. "I think the people of Bloomington Normal will love it." U of I to honor investigators in Scholar case, Associated Press, Champaign. Three law enforcement officials will be honored for their work investigating the killer of a visiting Chinese scholar at the University of Illinois. Sergeant James Carter, Detective Eric Stiverson, and telecommunicator Kenny Costa of the University of Illinois Police Department will be awarded the Chancellor's Medallion at a ceremony February 24th in Champaign. The award is the highest honor given by the university and has been awarded 7 times. Brent Christensen was convicted and sentenced to life in prison last year in the June 2017 kidnapping of Yingying Zhang. She was a graduate student who had recently arrived at the school's campus. The Champaign News-Gazette reports that Costa watched hours of security camera footage after Zhang was reported missing, eventually finding video of her getting into a black Saturn Astra. Decatur business. Decanter to close after nearly 14 years. Co-owner Delaney, "It's just time for us." Allison Petty, Herald and Review, Decatur. Owners of the Decanter Fine Wine and Spirits Shop in downtown Decatur said Monday that they plan to close after nearly 14 years in business. "It's just time for us," co-owner Mike Delaney said in a phone interview Monday afternoon. "We'd like to travel and do the things you do when you retire." In a statement, owners Delaney, Jay Emmerich, and Kevin Graham said they would close the store at 215 North Main Street on or before April 30th. Closeout sales were starting Monday. The business will maintain its regular hours at this time, and updated information will be posted on its Facebook page. "It's hard to encapsulate all the fun we have had since we opened our shop in 2006, the owners said. "We have learned a lot and met many wonderful people who, like us, enjoyed nothing better than having a fine glass of wine with dinner and friends. We feel that we have accomplished our goal of offering great wines at great prices, along with sharing knowledge and providing great customer service." They encourage people to continue to support locally owned businesses. Although the owners will be closing another downtown store, Delaney said they aren't worried about the area. "Saul Bistro closed, even though we thought they were doing well," Delaney said, referring to the popular downtown restaurant at 237 North Main Street, which closed in July. "We're closing just because it's time," he continued. "I'm not worried about it." The decanter opened on June 30, 2006. The store had carried about 500 different types of wine, including some Illinois varieties that are kept in a special section near the front. Those include wines from Willow Ridge Winery in Shelbyville, as well as others from different parts of the state. It also sells spirits, salamis, cheese, and crackers. The business, for years, has hosted regular wine tastings on Fridays and Saturdays. The inventory has remained the same throughout the years, but it has slowly been depleting in the past few months, Delaney said. "We've had spirits and craft beers and accessories." The photo here. In this July 2016 file photo, Jamie Bond, Laura Hutchins, and Amber Hutchins stopped in at the decanter during the weekly wine tasting at the downtown Decatur store. Looks like four bottles of wine and glasses on a table. The people mentioned in the photo and in the background, many, many wines and along the wall and also on the floor in cases. We'll move over to page A5, The Nation and World, and there's an article on the coronavirus. Most cases described as mild. Official report provides details on almost 45,000 virus patients, Associated Press. Mainland China reported 1,886 new virus cases and 98 more deaths as a total of 1,868 in its update Tuesday, following a report that 80% of cases have been mild. The latest figures come after health officials in China published the first details on almost 45,000 cases of infection with the coronavirus that originated there, saying more than 80% have been mild and new ones seem to be falling since early this month. A total of 72,436 cases were reported in mainland China as of Tuesday, though a spike in recent cases was due to a broader definition in the hardest hit region based on doctors' diagnoses before laboratory tests were completed. Monday's report from the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention gives the World Health Organization a clearer picture of the outbreak, how it's developing, and where it's headed. WHO's Director General said at a news conference, "It's too early to tell if this reported decline will continue. Every scenario is still on the table," Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said. Meanwhile, more than 300 American cruise ship passengers, including 14 who tested positive for coronavirus, were quarantined at military bases in California and Texas on Monday after arriving from Japan on charter flights. One plane carrying cruise passengers touched down at Travis Air Force Base in Northern California just before midnight Sunday, while another arrived at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas early Monday. The passengers will remain at the bases for 2 weeks. The U.S. said it arranged for the evacuation because people on the Diamond Princess were at high risk of exposure to the new virus. Also Monday, Apple Inc. warned investors that it won't meet its second quarter financial guidance because the viral outbreak in China cut production of iPhones. The company said all of its iPhone manufacturing facilities are outside Hubei province, the epicenter of the outbreak, and are all reopened, but the company said production is ramping up slowly. Apple said demand for iPhones is also down in China because many of Apple's 42 retail stores there are closed or operating with reduced hours. China is Apple's third largest retail market for iPhones after the U.S. and Europe. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, February 18th, 2020. Please stay tuned.